ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, entitled The Prayers Offered to the Lord by the Residents of Jambudvipa. And we'll be reading texts 1 and 2. But before this, there's a chapter summary for the chapter, so I thought I'll read the summary written by Srila Prabhupada of this chapter. In this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami describes the different varshas of Jambudvipa and the incarnation of the Supreme Lord worshipped in each. The predominating ruler of Bharat Varsha is Bhadrashrava. He and his many servants always worship the incarnation known as Lord Hayagriva. At the end of each kalpa, when the demon Ajnana steals the Vedic knowledge, Lord Hayagriva appears and preserves it. Then he delivers it to Lord Brahma. In the land known as Harivarsha, the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj worships Lord Nrisimhadev. The appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev is described in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, the inhabitants of Harivarsha always worship Lord Nrisimhadev to receive from him the benediction of being engaged in his loving service. In the tract of land known as Ketu Mala Varsha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hrishikesha, appears in the form of Cupid, the goddess of fortune, and the demigods live there, and the demigods living there engage in his service day and night. Manifesting himself in 16 parts, Lord Hrishikesha is the source of all encouragement, strength, and influence. The conditioned living entity has the defect of always being fearful. But simply by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can rid himself of this defect of material life. Therefore, the Lord alone can be addressed as Master. In the tract of land known as Ramyaka Varsha, Manu and all the inhabitants worship Matsyadeva to this very day. Matsyadeva, whose form is pure goodness, is a ruler and maintainer of the whole universe, and as such, he is the director of all the demigods, headed by King Indra. In Hiranmayavarsha, Lord Vishnu has assumed the form of a tortoise, Kurma Murti, and is worshipped there by Aryama, along with all the other residents. Similarly, in the tract of land known as Uttarakuru Varsha, Lord Srihari has assumed the form of a boar, and in that form he accepts service from all the inhabitants living there. All the information in this chapter can be fully recognized by one who associates with the devotees of the Lord. Therefore, in the Shastras, it is recommended that one associate with devotees. This is better than residing on the banks of the Ganga. In the hearts of pure devotees reside all good sentiments as well as all the superior qualities of the demigods. In the hearts of non-devotees, however, there cannot be any good qualities. For such people are simply enchanted by the external illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of the Lord. Following in the footsteps of devotees, one should know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only worshipable deity. Everyone should accept this proposal and worship the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaishya sarvair aham eva vedya. The purpose of studying all Vedic literature is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. If after studying all the Vedic literature one does not awaken his dormant love for the Supreme Lord, it is to be understood that he has labored for nothing. He has simply wasted his time. Lacking attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he remains attached to family life in this material world. Thus, the lesson of this chapter is that one should get out of family life and completely take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So, I'll just read text 1, and then after that, we will repeat text 2, because text 1 doesn't have a purport. Shri Shuka Vacha Tathaya Bhadrashava Nama Dharmasutas Tatkula Pratya Purusha Bhadrashava Varsha Sakshad Bhagavato Vasudevasya Priyam Tanum Dharmamayim Hayashirsha Pidhanam Paramin Samadhina Sannidhapyedam Abhigrananta Upadhavanti. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Bhadrashrava, the son of Dharmaraja, rules the tract of land known as Bhadrashva Varsha. Just as Lord Shiva worships Sankarsana in Ilavrata Varsha, Bhadrashrava, accompanied by his intimate servants and all the residents of the land, worships the plenary expansion of Vasudev, known as Hayashirsha. Lord Hayashirsha is very dear to the devotees, and he is the director of all religious principles. Fixed in the topmost trance, Bhadrashrava and his associates offer their respectful obeisances to the Lord and chant the following prayers with careful pronunciation. Please repeat. Bhadrashrava sa uvacha. So this doesn't have a meter, it's just one long, so I'll just say the whole thing and we can repeat. Om namo bhagavate dharma yatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Om namo bhagavate dharma yatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Om namo bhagavate dharma yatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Namo bhagavate dharmayatma dhanaya nama iti. Bhadrashravasa uchu. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma bhadrashravasa uchu. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Mataji. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Om namo bhagavate dharmayatma vishodhanaya nama iti. Bhadrashravasa uchu. The ruler Bhadrashrava and his intimate associates said, Om, O Lord, Namaha, respectful obeisances, Bhagavate, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dharmaya, the source of all religious principles, Atma Vishodhanaya, who purifies us of material contamination, Namaha, our obeisances. Iti, thus. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki. The ruler Bhadrashava and his intimate associates utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again, we offer our respectful obeisances unto Him. Please repeat. The ruler Bhadrashava and his intimate associates utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again, we offer our respectful obeisances unto Him. Purport. Foolish materialistic persons do not know how they are being controlled and punished at every step by the laws of nature. They think they are very happy in the conditioned state of material life. Not knowing the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age and disease. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 7.15, Lord Krishna describes such materialistic persons as mudhas, rascals. Namam duskritano mudha prapadyante naradhama. These mudhas do not know that if they want to purify themselves, they must worship Lord Vasudev, Krishna, by performing penances and austerities. This purification is the aim of human life. This life is not meant for blind indulgence in sense gratification. In the human form, the living beings must engage himself in Krishna consciousness to purify his existence. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhyet. This is the instruction of King Rishabdev to his sons. In the human form of life, one must undergo all kinds of austerities to purify his existence. Yasmad brahma sokhyam fanantam. We are all seeking happiness, but because of our ignorance and foolishness, we cannot know what unobstructed happiness really is. Unobstructed happiness is called brahma sokhya, spiritual happiness. Although we may get some so-called happiness in this material world, that happiness is temporary. The foolish materialist cannot understand this. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj points out, Maya sukhaya param udvahato vimudhan. Merely for temporary materialistic happiness, these rascals are making huge arrangements and they're baffled life after life. Om jnanam timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurur melitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. So here we are continuing with the description in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the entire planetary system of all the universes. And as Shukadev Goswami is describing all these planetary systems, he also then describes the people there. And when he describes the people in these places, he also takes the time to describe the prayers that they offer to the Lord. So we can understand his sort of his priority, where he's describing the creation oftentimes in a few verses, but then he'll spend a whole chapter describing the prayers of that planet. That what are the people on that planet doing? Oh, they're offering prayers to the Lord. Oh, these are the prayers that they are offering. So Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to give us an overall picture of the universe, so that we can become free of it, so that we can understand how to get out of it, how to break out of it. But it's giving it just for that purpose, for no other purpose, not for some, you could say, scientific interest or cosmological interest. It's for the purpose of understanding, okay, this is what the material world is. All these different levels of happiness are there. This is how it is shaped. This is how we can appreciate Krishna's intelligence and his creation that is so vast, is so to impress upon us also how great it is. And it's accurate also. The Bhagavatam, what it's teaching us, is it's accurate also. Everything that it's saying is correct. But it's not giving us all the details because it doesn't need to. It doesn't need the time, it need to spend the time to give us all the details of all the different parts of the creation. Because its specific purposes, the Bhagavatam's specific goal in mind or purpose of this is to try to help us realize what is the purpose of the creation. Right? Not exactly, well, what is exactly the creation or how is it formed, but what is the purpose of the creation? Why is it here? Why are we here? And why is the universe here? Why is the material world here? Just like some people, they say that science answers the how questions, right? It asks and answers the how questions. How does something work? How does the universe work? How do planets move around the universe? And they say religion answers the why question. Okay, we understand how it works, but just because we understand how it works doesn't tell us why it works. Why should it work? And why does it work in such a way? So maybe that's true to some extent, that all of sort of mundane material knowledge is about answering the how question. How to make machines work, how to build homes, how to make money. But spiritual knowledge is asking why. Why should I make money? Why am I living in this world? Why does the universe exist? So here in this verse, Bhadrashava is answering this question, being actually one of the you could say controllers or leaders of this universe. He's also possibly he's often asked this question: well, why does this universe exist? If he's running this universe, he's one of the he says this planet is under his rulership. Then he should know what is the purpose of this material world. What is the purpose of the world which he is ruling? So here, he's saying that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described, he is the source of all dharma. He is the source of all religious principles. And he has made this world because he cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. So the purpose of this world, ultimately, is to cleanse the heart of all the living beings who are in this world. And therefore, he says, again and again, we offer our respectful obeisances unto him. So the purpose, they often ask this question also in discussions on science and religion. They ask, this is a common question, does the universe have a purpose? Like, are we just here because we just happen to be here? Or is this world purpose-driven? Is there a purpose behind it? So here he's telling that the purpose of all the creations in this world, with so many different varieties that have been described in the Bhagavatam, is ultimately to purify, to cleanse the heart of the conditioned soul. So Krishna provides so many different varieties of enjoyment, and he provides so many different varieties of suffering, simply because he wants to purify the conditioned soul of all of his different desires and his hankerings. And possibly if we examine our life, we find this actually, that whatever situation we are put in by Krishna, or even by our choice, let's say, at the end, the position that we end up in, it's the best possible situation we could have been in. That we have to have the faith that whatever Krishna is putting us, whatever situation Krishna is putting us in, it's the best position that we could have been in and the best experiences that we could have had to free our heart of the various desires that we have. Now, but that doesn't mean, so what that means then is that we're in that situation to realize something, and the quicker we make the effort to realize it, the quicker we will advance in spiritual life. But the point being that all the various experiences or situations in this world are there because nothing happens by chance, like Srila Prabhupada said. Every single experience has a purpose to teach us something. One time, Hanumat Preshak Maharaj was describing how one time he witnessed a car accident. So he was actually there when a very horrible car accident happened. And this lady was in the car, driving the car, and it just, you know, the car smashed. And then he was trying to open the door to help this lady come out or try to do whatever. He knows a little bit of first aid, so he thought, he's witnessed it two or three times in his life. He said, most people, they'll never witness a car accident. You hear about it. But he is saying how somehow Krishna was giving him these experiences so he could see it firsthand. So he experienced it at least twice in his life. So this was one time. And this accident was there, and this lady was there, and she was deeply hurt. Like she had a big cut on her leg. Blood was coming out, and other, you know, deep cuts as well. And the first thing that went through his mind was, you know, Krishna, how could you do this? You know, how could this happen? And then he said that then just as, you know, the car was there and it's falling out, then she apparently had a fridge in the back of the car, something like this. And the door opened, and it had also opened, and then this big piece of ham, this big piece of meat, also rolled out of the freezer. And it sort of fell on the floor, you know, like this. And for a moment, he wasn't sure. Did this come from the lady, or did this come from somewhere else? Because the color and everything is just exactly the same. It was like the same red color and all these things. So just as he was thinking this, that, oh, Krishna, how could you do this? This sort of piece of meat or ham came out. And then, of course, it was still a very sorry situation, but also he could understand, oh, Krishna, everything that he does has a purpose. He's trying to teach the soul something trying to help the soul come back to him. So in the 12th canto also, the Bhagavatam says that ultimately the living being, this universe is created for the living being. It's created for the enjoyment and pleasure of the living being, and he says that, and ultimately for his liberation. So many times in the Bhagavatam, the soul is described as the hetu, or the cause, the ultimate cause, or even the karta, the doer. It's described as the cause of this universe. And all these things, like Prabhupada saying, birth, death, old age, and disease, he's saying, the conditioned soul does not know the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. He says all these things are created for a purpose, right? Birth has a purpose, death has a purpose, old age and disease. All these things have purposes which are meant for the upliftment, for the purification of the living being and the soul. So, in the Vedanta Sutra, this very question is asked. They asked this very question, that why does the Lord create? Right? They say, the Lord, one of the qualities of the Lord is that He's fully self-satisfied. Right? He has no desires to fulfill. He's, what's that word? Svatantra, right? Oh, no. Yes, he's fully self-satisfied. So, if the Lord is fully self-satisfied, then the Vedanta Sutra asks, well, why then does the Lord create? And here, it's asking also, why does the Lord create the living beings? Why does He create the material world? Why does He create time? Why does He create all these things? So why do we think, maybe, that the Lord creates this material world? If He has nothing to fulfill, the objector, the opposition says, is that the Lord cannot be the creator because He has nothing to fulfill. He's fully satisfied, and no one performs some activity unless there's some purpose to fulfill. Yes. Yes, that is true, but the Vedanta Sutra is asking, why does He create us to begin with? So once we're here, then we can say, well, He creates the material world. This is Until now we've been talking about this, that he's creating the world for the purification of the soul. But why does he want to create to begin with? Why does he create the living being? For his pleasure. For his pleasure. Yes. But pleasure, not in the sense of trying to gain some pleasure, because we said that the Lord is fully self-satisfied. So he needs no pleasure. Right? He needs no happiness. He's satisfied within himself. And yet, Yes, so that is one point that it says, well, we are never created. We're beginningless. We're the Lord. We're always with the Lord, alongside Him. But the Lord is still the Creator. We still refer to Him as the Creator in the sense that He keeps us in existence, right? The Bhagavatam says is that all these things are in creation because the Lord is glancing upon them. The moment He removes His glance, everything will be destroyed, can be destroyed. So, the Lord is still the Creator in the sense that He's created every moment, in the sense that He keeps us into existence. He's continuously creating us in the sense that He's maintaining us. Yes. I mean, similar to what both for pleasure, for all, but at the same time, although he's fully satisfied, he does this simply because Vedanta Sutra says this is his lila, this is his play. In other words, this is who he is. It is part of his nature to create the worlds, to create the living entities, so that there is loving exchange, so there's play, so there's happiness. So Krishna has created us, or we are in existence, for the very purpose of this loving exchange between the soul and Krishna. This is even though he doesn't need anything, he's fully self-satisfied. Still, this is who he is. This is his very nature, and because this is what it means that he's fully self-satisfied is that part of his nature is to create so many living beings and to enjoy with them. So from this we can understand that our very purpose of existence, the reason why we are here, is for this exchange of love between the soul and Krishna. But then the natural question that arises, and the question that the objector, the Vedanta Sutra works in questions and answers. So the objector, he questions as well, but what type of play is this? Right, so this is for Krishna's lila, which means play. The universe was created for Krishna's play. But then he says, what type of play is this? Isn't the Lord then put to blame for inequality and cruelty? That in this world he's made people unequal, and he's made the world in such a way that people are suffering. So then the Vedanta Sutra responds, and it says, yes, but inequality and cruelty is not due to lila. This is why Krishna creates the world. This is the motivation in some ways for the universe. But he says inequality and cruelty is due to the karma, to the action of the living being. It is due to their own activity. It is due to their own desire. And therefore, the living being, some living beings are enjoying and other living beings are suffering in this material world. And then the objector asked this very same question, this point which you raised. He said, yes, but in the beginning there was no karma. So in the beginning the Lord must have put this inequality. So one person decided to do good, another person decided to do bad. So the Lord is still to blame for this inequality and cruelty in this world. So then the Vedanta Sutra replies, but no, karma is beginningless. And here, our acharyas explain that karma, as many places in the Gita and the Bhagavatam, karma simply refers to action. Right? So he says activity, or the action of the soul, is beginningless. So both all the souls and the living beings They have been there since beginningless time. Krishna has kept them into existence. And action or activity has been their eternal nature, their eternal accompaniment, whether it be in the spiritual world or in the material world. So, therefore, there was no beginning. Right? We are, the living being is an eternally individual soul with an individual nature and desires and activities. So, it is due to the desire, right? It is due to the activity of the soul that this soul comes to this material world and tries to seek happiness. It is due to the desire, to the karma of the soul, that the soul leaves this shelter of the Lord, sort of rejects the shelter of the Lord, and desires to come in this world and enjoy separate from Him. So, we have this desire, and it's, in some ways it's not, in Christianity they focus a lot on sin, that it's a sinful desire, it's a bad desire. In some case, in our philosophy, it's an unfortunate desire, right? In the spiritual world, we're not sinful, it's just unfortunate. We have this desire that I want to enjoy separate from Krishna. And therefore we come to this material world, and this world is designed in such a way that through these experiences, Krishna will make us ultimately desire the right thing. Right? He'll make us regret our decision of leaving Krishna and then desire the right thing and come back to Him. And therefore, the Bhagavatam gives this very amazing analogy of the forest of material enjoyment. That the living entity is going through this forest and it describes how it is enjoying and suffering in so many different ways. And sometimes it comes across a thorny path, sometimes it comes across a forest fire. And then finally, after all these experiences, it becomes so frustrated, and then it says, the Bhagavatam says, then the soul takes to the path of the bees, right? In the forest, everyone is suffering except for the bees. The bees are enjoying the forest. They're going and smelling the flowers and taking the honey from the trees, producing the honey on the trees. So they take, finally, after being so frustrated, they take to the path of the bees, which is the path of the devotees. Right? The devotees, the Vaishnavas, are compared to the bees who are smelling, even in the material world, they're smelling the fragrance from the lotus feet of Krishna. And then the soul gains happiness. So we've left the shelter of the Lord, and therefore here the Padrashava is saying how therefore again and again we offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Right? Therefore the solution for this, what they're describing here, is Krishna's put us in this world to, you know, He's doing His task of putting us in this world and making us become detached from it. But then He's saying, from our side, what we do is then we offer our obeisances to the Lord. Right? The living entity then in this world, all he can do after realizing this is to become free of this is simply to continuously and repeatedly offer obeisances to the Lord. Take shelter of the Lord. And here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying that therefore, since this material world is meant to purify the heart of the living entity, we can speed up that process. We can, you know, move forward on that process, quicken it, if we purify our existence through austerities, right, through tapasya, through penance. Because penance purifies the austerity, purifies the heart of the living being. Just like I think last time we were mentioning in last class how one person asked Srila Prabhupada that if the material world is designed to take us back home back to Godhead, then why do we have to endeavor so much in spiritual life? Ultimately, we will all make it back to the spiritual world. And Srila Prabhupada responded, he said, yes, ultimately we will all go back to the spiritual world. But he said, but you can go back in 1 million lifetimes, and I will go back in this lifetime. Right? So it's the same idea here that the material world is perfect for its purpose. Right? Our stay here will have a beginning and have an end. Ultimately it will bring us to Krishna. But, and actually this analogy of the forest of enjoyment in the Bhagavatam, it describes this. There's one verse in there which it says that there's this caravan of merchants that goes into this forest, right? And they enjoy and suffer in so many different ways. And then at one place it says, and they're experiencing all these things because they have not returned to their starting point. Right? So we're all going through this journey of this material life. And someone's on at some place on this journey. Someone is just starting, someone is in the middle, someone is towards the end. And ultimately, it sort of leads us back to the place where we start, meaning Krishna. So austerities, therefore the Bhagavatam, again and again, it focuses on austerities. That what is the purpose of human life if we don't perform austerities? And here, Srila Prabhupada is quoting Lord Rishabhdev, Nayam deha deha bhajan loke kashtana kaman arati vita bhujanre tapo divyam putrika yena sattvam shudheta sattva brahma sokhyam anantam. The Lord Rishadev is telling his sons that this human life is not meant for the trivial pleasures that are found in the animal species of life as well. And here he's being especially graphic in this verse. And the animal species that he mentions is which species? Rishabhdev. In this verse, he describes, he says that human life is not meant for the pleasures as found in the animal species of life. And then in this, Srila Prabhupada very often quoted this verse. Is it? He gives the example of the hogs. Right, and specifically, he doesn't say the word hogs. The way he describes them is vita bhujan, which literally in Sanskrit means one who eats stool. So he's making it's one of the very heavy verses of the Bhagavatam that we don't quote very often. He's making the point that this human life is not meant for trivial pleasures that are found in other species of life. And because why? Because these pleasures are temporary and dissatisfying. Right? They never satisfy the soul, and they're very temporary. And so therefore, he says, tapo divyam, perform austerities. Why? Not for these temporary pleasures, but for brahma sokhyam anantam, for eternal, unlimited happiness. So the austerities, it's not that there's no positive aspect to it. The austerities, he's describing their result. What is the result of performing these austerities? It's Brahma Sokhyam Anantam. It's unending and unlimited spiritual happiness. So he's describing, well, this is what you get. If you perform these austerities, he's also describing this is the wonderful result of these activities. Then Prabhupada is then... He's then quoting then Prahlad Maharaj, who describes a similar thing. This is Maya Sukhaya Bharam Udvato Vimudhan, where he is lamenting that why are the living beings engrossed in this Maya Sukhaya, which he says the happiness of Maya, or the illusory happiness, the temporary happiness which vanishes. Right. So Prahlad Maharaj here, he's lamenting for those who are experiencing this temporary happiness, and he's saying that I'm not fearful of this material world, but I'm simply concerned about those who are suffering in this material world with this temporary happiness. So one must perform austerities, here is being described, to purify one's existence. And fulfill in some ways the purpose of this material world and return to the spiritual world. And one thing that can inspire us for these austerities is meditating, here's being described as meditating on the temporariness or the temporality of this material world. The temporariness or the temporality of this material world is the, you could say, is the inspiration for spiritual practice. Here Prabhupada is describing is that this is not something that we need to take on faith. Right? We see it. We see it in the world that everything is very temporary. And spiritual life means fully realizing that, coming to a realization that, oh, in fact, everything is temporary. And we often hear this. We listen to this statement so many times that, oh, everything in this material world is temporary, the body is temporary, the soul is eternal. But we sometimes don't realize the consequences of that statement or the what this actually statement means. I remember one time I was just, you know, reading through the Bhagavatam. And we've read through this so many times. And one time I was reading and Srila Prabhupada there was saying, oh, mature life is temporary, like he says so many times. And somehow that time when I was reading, it actually, it has to click more. But actually at that time, something clicked. It was like, oh, really? Yes, Prabhupada is saying everything is temporary. Like everything that we do, all of our aspirations, all of our endeavors, all of our activities, everything is temporary. It's all going to end. So we hear it over and over again, and we need to hear it over and over again, so that it sinks into us that in fact everything is temporary, and it's maya sukhaya, right? It's the flickering happiness of this material world, and therefore endeavor is being described. Endeavor should be performed to purify the heart and become free of material conditioning. Right? Endeavor should be performed to realize the Lord. So I'll stop here, and if there's any discussion or comments. Yes. Yes, this mature world sort of increases our eagerness to return back to the Lord. So many times Prabhupada said, the difficulties of this mature world are a catalyst for spiritual life. Right? This is what pushes us forward in spiritual life. Because if they weren't there, then why would we endeavor for spiritual life? So it increases our intensity, our desire to attain the Lord. And this is also, Prabhupada says, that therefore the mood of the devotee in this world, the sort of the mentality of the devotee in this world, is one of separation. Right? That the devotee should be feeling separation from the Lord. That, oh, I've left you. Right? I turned. Therefore, he's saying the solution is, again and again, we offer our obeisances to the Lord. And later in the 10th canto also, that famous verse, Tathenu Kampam Shushamikshamano, Lord Brahma is saying that one who that person becomes liberated, that person who within his mind is continuously offering obeisance to the Lord, especially whenever some difficulty comes. Because that person knows, ultimately, what else can I do? I mean, it's the whole material world is a hopeless situation. Right? There's no situation that really works. So all I can do is continuously surrender to the Lord, continuously offer prayers. So the devotee is experiencing, the devotee's mentality is to experience separation from the Lord. And the difficulties of this mature world, the experience of this world, intensifies that separation. Right? It increases that eagerness where the devotee feels, I never want to come back to this world. Right? So, yes. I probably had... the Bhagavatam rejects the five standard types of liberation. Right? It rejects liberation of merging into the Lord. It rejects the liberation of having the same form as the Lord, or the same abode as the Lord, or the same opulences of the Lord. But it doesn't reject the liberation of devotional service, of the liberation that is the highest liberation, is when one simply wants to serve the Lord. So the devotee is very eager for liberation, in fact, because he wants to become liberated from, he wants to attain the service of the Lord. So, at least as for now, for us, Prabhupada said we should be very eager to return back to Godhead. Because this is our level of realization, that we should be eager to leave this material world, because right now we're attached to it. So the best thing we can do is try to become detached from it and want to go to the spiritual world. But the liberation that the devotee is asking for is a liberation of eternally being engaged in the Lord's service. So the devotee wants liberation, but not so that he can enjoy like the Lord, but so that he can serve the Lord. And yes, when we become very advanced, then it doesn't matter where we're serving the Lord. But right now, Prabhupada said, it's okay. We should want to go back to Godhead. Because then, once we go back to Godhead, then we can always come back down to the material world on Krishna's order, right? On His order. Yes. Yes. Pure devotional service, right? It's simply unalloyed, uninterrupted devotional service to the Lord. That is ultimate liberation. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Nice point that you made. There's one Christian preacher who used to come to our campus quite regularly, and he would stand in the main quad in the main section of the campus, and he would always be preaching on a little podium to the students. You know, every university have this circle there, which is sort of like a free speech area or whatever. So he would be, and his main thing, which he kept on saying, was sin. You know, he's like, we're born in sin. And his message in some ways was also good. He was sort of encouraging this. He was saying, if you're not pious, if you're not spiritual, then this sin will continue and all these things. So one time, I got the went up to him, got the courage, and went up to him, and I asked him. This is sort of on the side. Once he had finished his preaching, I asked him that it's very nice you're doing this, but why do you keep on focusing on sin? Why don't you focus on the fact that the world is temporary, that we're going to die? Because when you used to focus on sin, like you're saying, the students would come and get really angry. They're just like, how can you just be here and cursing us and telling us that we're in sin and telling us to stop and telling us all these things? Because, I mean, imagine if someone comes up to you, even in our temple, let's say, and say, you're in sin, you're a sinner. It's like, it hurts, right? It's kind of like even though this is also our scriptures teaching us, yeah, no, these things are sinful. But still, it would make the students very angry. So I said, why do you keep on focusing on sin? Why not focus on the fact that the world is temporary? because this is something they can't argue with. Right? This is you're just pointing out a reality. You're not saying, you're not making the claim that, oh, you are in sin. You're saying, well, just look around you, observe at the world, and all of us are one day going to die. So the world is temporary. So why don't you do something that will lead to permanence? That will lead from temporality, which is obviously suffering and all these things, to the world of permanence. And he kind of liked the point. He was like, yeah, you're kind of right. Because in the Bible, Christ does say this. He does preach like this. Christ says, focus on the eternal, focus on the permanent. And that's how you progress in spiritual life. And then I was thinking that, in fact, this is the way also that Srila Prabhupada was preaching, that he always focused on birth and death, old age and disease. Right? This is like his theme line, that life is temporary. So now let's come to the permanent. Let's inquire into the absolute so we can come to the stage of permanence. He wasn't into condemning or pointing out sinful. He was just pointing out the reality of this world. He's saying, look, I can provide you a better alternative, which is the life of permanence. So Srila Prabhupada, he knew exactly how to present it to the people, that he was just focusing on this point that of temporality. The world is temporary, and in this way he could appeal to their reasoning and their intelligence. So yeah, it's a nice point. Okay, I guess. Right. Yes, that's. Yeah, generally we're always, like you're saying, we seem to approach Lord Nrisimhadev for protection. He's like the deity of protection, and in general, actually, the same question came to my mind, and in general, we don't worship other incarnations of Krishna. Like we worship Lord Krishna, we worship Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself in the form of a devotee. Then we worship Lord Jagannath, who is Krishna in Dvaraka, we could say, or Krishna in Vrindavan also. But Lord Nrisimhadev is like a exception to that, that we worship Lord Nrisimhadev, and we have big temples and deities of Lord Nrisimhadev, and Lord Ramachandra also. And a few times I heard that they say that Lord Nrisimhadev has a special position, that if one worships Lord Nrisimhadev very nicely, then he gets love in the mood of the gopis. So therefore, Lord Nrisimhadev is in our sampradaya. So somehow, even though he's so ferocious, he gets love in the mood of the gopis with his nails covered with blood. he's offering that love. So somehow he's like very like, because maybe this, and this is just, I haven't read this anywhere, this is just my thought, that maybe because he himself appeared for no other reason out of love for his devotee, like, you know, he came for Prahlad Maharaj sort of like a lion cub, you know, like you know, in that mood of protecting his devotee, then it's Krishna himself in some ways coming to save his devotee. So in some ways he's an incarnation, but in other ways he's not an incarnation. So if we appeal to him for protection, then he's still giving love for Krishna in return. So, and I've heard that devotees say that this is one thing, that the devotee has no material desires, but he can ask the Lord for protection. So this verse, Rupa Goswami says that the Lord has, that the devotee is anya bilashata shunyam, he's free from any ulterior motive. And then he gives an exception to that. He says, but let's say if the devotee is drowning, then he can call out to Krishna, oh, please save me. He says such a thing would not be called a motivation, because he's asking for protection, because unless he's alive, how can he serve the Lord? So one can ask for, it says, good health and protection, because these things are necessary for serving Krishna. So Bhagavatam says the devotee should desire only things, two things, is a healthy life and serving to and service to Krishna. Because he's yes. Well, they might find themselves in the same place. There's no need to send an email. Yes. So many devotees, many of our acharyas in Acharya are very, very attached to Lord Narsingadev worship. And that's why it's so amazing. Like, even currently in our movement, many of our spiritual masters and then many of our acharyas also, they're so attached to worshipping Lord Narsingadev. And it must be for this. And Srila Prabhupada himself, his favorite prayers, without any doubt, his favorite, you know, teachings was the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj and that story of Lord Narsingadev. So, without a doubt, there's something very special about this incarnation and this, because he came just for his devotee. I think this is why it's almost like Lord Jagannath. Lord Jagannath is overwhelmed by the love of his devotee, so his eyes become very big and he becomes like in a state of trance. So it's the same thing that Krishna takes this very funny form simply out of love for his devotee. He comes in this very awkward form. It's quite awkward for him, but he comes just for out of love for his devotee. So, yes. Wow, I didn't know. Yes. There's Chaitanya Singh. Jainish. Oh yes. Yes. Were you saying something? Okay, let's. Oh, that's very interesting. Okay. So now we have an authorized reference for it. Well, yeah, maybe you should publish that somewhere, because I'm sure devotees wonder about it. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.